It was an honor.
It was terrifying.
Yeah.
It was an honor. But yes, hardest thing I've ever done professionally was finish that last one in particular.
Yeah.
So many loose ends and so many things. And everybody wanted it to be perfect. And so I had a lot of different people offering advice and suggestions because we had Team Jordan, which was Harriet and Maria and Alan, who each kind of did an editorial pass, but all the people at the publisher also were very involved. And so, yeah, it was a complicated process, I'll tell you that.
Well, I just wanted to thank you because you finished and wrapped up one of my whole campaign.
Thank you.
Series. Just like content. After that, I was introduced to Mistborn, and I love it.
Well, thanks for giving it a try. I appreciate that.
It was the least I could do because after seeing what you did with Wheel of Time, I was very curious to find out about all your other work. And I must say that you're one of the most in the making so much archive for you to be.
Thank you.
My new next epic friend.
Great. You can know that I worked on it a little bit in Bulgaria.
Really?
I'm doing revisions right now.
That's going on the channel.
So there are some words, no actual scenes yet, but actual, you know, I've written words and added and tweaked, so Oathbringer is a little bit Bulgarian.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Maybe some Shalan words?
But maybe. I'm just going through and doing my fourth revision, so I'm hopping all over the place, adding here, taking away there, things like that, so.
I was curious, did you find time to do your Easter egg surprise at the airport, you know?
Oh, yeah. I did not this time. A lot of the European publishers are a little bit more scared by that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we'll see. When the next book comes out, I might be able to hide some things around. But yeah, I didn't. I glanced through the bookstore when I flew in, but I didn't see any of my books. Airport stores often only carry the bestsellers, and I don't know if my books are in any airport stores in Bulgaria.
Well, the airport bookstores are being but they're very, very scarce.
Yeah, any fantasy.
Any fantasy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. And usually their books a little lighter, mm-hmm. than people will take the plane. Mm-hmm. I also want to thank you for what you did with Wheel of Time. Mm. I actually started reading the Wheel of Time because of you.
Oh, wow.
Because I always wanted to try it, but it was too long, too heavy. So I accidentally read Mistborn, mm-hmm. because there was a female character on the cover.
Okay.
And I absolutely loved it. So I said to myself, now I have to read The Wheel of Time just to get a few books.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Do you read them in English or Bulgarian?
In Bulgarian.
Bulgarian.
I think after the 10th one I read it in English because I just had it.
Yeah. Yeah, so the whole Wheel of Time got published in Bulgaria.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And pretty fast, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's very popular. It's very popular. It's very popular. It's a song called Light and Fire. And
yeah.
Of course, the mm-hmm.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine, thanks. You?
I'm great.
I will be
so far.
So far, I like it. I've only been here one day.
Oh, so far you like it.
Yeah, we did go to Bulgarian food last night, which was very tasty. I posted
Bulgarian
a picture. Food.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you try?
I just had a mixed grill because I wanted to try all the different types of meats. We had bread and little globs of cheese and stuff you put on the bread. And then we had cold cucumber soup. It was really good.
Do not write a novel about
us. Oh, okay. Yeah, you don't.
But you can write a novel about this.
About the airport. Yeah.
Okay, so
take
pictures while you're talking.
Yeah. Just fine.
Yeah, she's the technical person of the channel.
And you guys can ask anything you want. Just start hitting me with questions, and I will. I will talk. I'm good at talking at length.
You're
good at writing also.
Yeah, thank you. I'm a bit of a blabbermouth, both on the page and verbally.
I got a question. I got a question. I must say that I am truly in love with your work.
Oh, thank you.
And your work as a writer is so populating. So wonderful. Do you just have a fashion world somewhere and you just, okay, I want to do this, and you pull it out and you just...
I do work on them for a while, so I do kind of have a stash of worlds waiting for the right story. Usually a book is a combination of three things. Some interesting ideas for character, some interesting ideas for a world, and some interesting ideas for a plot. And usually those bounce around separately in my head for quite a while until they start connecting and forming something cooler. Mistborn is a good example. Mistborn started as a group of separate ideas. The first idea was, what if the hero who is supposed to save the world fails, right?
Yeah.
That was idea number one. And then wanting to do a heist story, a gang of thieves in a fantasy world was another story, combined with the idea of Kelsier, the man who used, you know, the greatest con artist decides to do something good instead of just out for himself, that transformation of him. And so those ideas were all separate ideas. Allomancy and Ferrochemy were separate ideas. And I started combining them together in an outline, and that's where Mistborn came from, is growing out of that.
I gotta say that your writing skills is fantastic. Something wonderful to listen to.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, and I want to congratulate you on all the seasons that you've managed to make.
Lots of seasons.
Lots of seasons. 15 minutes long because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Basically, I wanted to ask, how did you come up with the idea to make a writing podcast, about writers? You know, there are not many writers who take out their time to just talk about all the hurdles they encounter, all their writing process. It's just
So writers, this is kind of a two-part question. How did I start the podcast, and why take the time for it? So writing is a very solitary thing, right? Learning how to write is very difficult because you have to be self-taught. Even a school can only help a little bit. Writing excuses, it can help a little bit, but mostly you have to be self-taught. It is a solitary thing. And often when you start writing, you just have no idea what you're doing. You have no direction. You just try writing your story. And I wanted to provide a resource that can give you some direction. Hello. No, you're fine. I think we're early. Yeah, we were way early. When I was starting out, the best advice I got was from authors who said, try this. So I wanted to take some time and do a podcast that was focused on different things you could try. Now, at the time, my brother was taking a media arts class, and he wanted to try doing a podcast. And he came to me and said, I want to do a podcast, but he wanted to do a scripted podcast, a story.
Yeah.
And I said, I do not have time to write a radio drama, but what I would like to do is a writing resource. And so the two of us came together, and then I went and gathered a team of writers to be on the podcast, and it grew out of that.
I don't know if any of you guys have had the chance to listen to your excuses, but I strongly recommend it.
Yeah,
I'm sure you did. But it's a great resource for, it has all kinds of topics, and it's very funny, and of course it's very short because we like things concise and to the point. So
I was familiar with podcasts at the time. A lot of them rambled a lot, and I enjoy that, a long rambling podcast, but I didn't want to do that. I wanted to make one that was very focused, that got to the point and gave you information and then didn't overstay itself.
I just want to say that you succeeded completely. It was great to listen to, and it has very, very useful advice for people who are trying to write.
Well, thank you. So other questions?
I am very curious. When do you sleep at all?
You know, I get a normal amount of sleep. I people joke about me writing a lot. I've been working a lot.
I don't think they're joking.
But, I am just very consistent. I'm not very fast. I do a little bit each day, and that adds up. My advantage as a writer, I have a couple of advantages. One was that when I started, I was really bad at this, and so I had to work a long time and develop really good habits in order to become a good writer. And I feel that some of my colleagues who are more naturally talented, they didn't have to learn the same sort of sometimes difficult scheduling and work sort of things that I had to learn. I had to practice a long time. I wrote 13 novels before I sold one. And so during those years, I cursed that, but it taught me really good habits. And so I have that advantage. The other big advantage I have is I'm very naturally even-tempered. I don't have a lot of days that I don't feel like working. I feel like working, you know. I'm good at getting up and doing my job and feeling good about it and things like this. So I have a very even temperament. So I just work every day.
Okay. If you are not naturally talented, why did you decide to become a writer at all?
So,
I mean,
yeah,
what was your motivation to...
I started late. A lot of writers started writing their first book when they were like 5 years old or something, right? He's probably working on his first novel.
Yeah,
he's the 2-year-old there. It's probably well at work. I was not a reader when I was younger. I had a teacher who got me into books when I was in eighth grade. And she got me reading fantasy novels. It's her fault. The first one I read was Dragon's Bane by Barbara Hambly, Dragonsbane. And I fell in love with books because they took me, you know, epic fantasy took me wonderful places. And it changed the way I see the world, and it let me see through interesting characters' eyes. And it made me feel these really powerful emotions. And I decided then and there, I have to do this. I've got to be a writer. But I didn't know what I was doing because I hadn't been a reader when I was younger. I was way behind everyone else. And so that's part of why it took me so long. I became an avid reader, but I read a ton over the next few years and started writing my first book about maybe a year after I discovered books, but I was not very good. It was a really bad copy of, it was like a Dragonlance fan fiction, the very first thing I wrote. It was a really bad Dragonlance fan fiction, and it took me a long time. It took me a number of years, but I did eventually start figuring it out.
Mm-hmm. I have a question because I've been really into writing a season. You said that you've always known that you're going to be a writer, and as you put it, I've never worked a day in my life. You know,
I've never had a real job. I've never had a real profession. I have had real jobs. So I worked a number of years at a graveyard shift at a hotel where I'd go and be the front desk clerk. But the reason this wasn't a real job is because I got to work and I did the last few check-ins and then I started writing. And I would write from midnight until 5 a.m. every night at the front desk. And it wasn't a real job because I got to do what I wanted to do and I got paid for it. And yes, at about 5 a.m., people start coming down to get checked out, or they'd ask for towels and things. And so then I was busy. But I had 5 hours of just working on my stories every night. So, yeah, I never really had to have a real job. I did do a couple other side jobs. I worked selling neckties.
No.
In a holiday booth in the mall. That was one of my jobs. I sold corn in a pickup truck on the side of the road. This is when you're in your young 20s and you just take whatever job you can get. But during both of those, I sat and wrote in the pickup truck in the cold, because it was October. I would sit and I would write in a notebook on my first book. That was one of my very first jobs. And then I got the job at the tie cart, and so I would sit and write between customers coming. And then I got the job at the hotel, and so all of my jobs were me sitting and writing. I was probably, for a lot of jobs, I would have been a terrible employee. For the hotel, I was a good employee because they just wanted somebody who would stay up overnight. Right. They just didn't want, they wanted me to be awake in case there was a disaster. So I was the perfect employee for them. But my boss at the time just joked that he paid me to write all my books. And he didn't pay me to write a number of them.
So you were always committed. You always knew those jobs were temporary. And
I know is a strong term. I knew very early on that I was going to be a writer for the rest of my life. I didn't know if I would be a professional writer, right? Like, I might, if I'd never sold a book, I believe I would still be writing, but I would have eventually had to get a real job. And I don't know what real job I would have gotten. I mean, I have a master's degree in creative writing, so it's not like my job is particularly useful for anything else. And in the States, you need a PhD to teach college, so I didn't have a PhD. I can teach now on professional credentials, and so that's why I'm a professor now. But I couldn't have gotten that job if I hadn't published or if I hadn't gone and gotten a PhD. I am super lucky or super blessed or probably both. But I actually managed to make this work because I would have been useless at anything else. I'd be like, Mr. Incredible sitting in the little office, miserable. But I would have a notebook and I'd be writing stories and ignoring my other job. It wouldn't be good.
And you never thought about doing a PhD?
No, not really. When I was at... Hey, how you doing? Pull up a chair. So during my master's degree, I don't know how it is in Bulgaria, but I learned very quickly that if I wanted to get into a PhD program, I had all kinds of things I had to do that were not writing, right? I had to, all sorts of, we say in English, there were hoops to jump through, all sorts of stuff I would have had to do. And I decided I couldn't do any of that because I needed to spend my time writing. That if I spend all of my time working on journals, being assistants to professors, to just doing all the stuff that gets you in a PhD program, I wouldn't be writing. And so I decided I would be a writer, and I gave up on ever getting a PhD at that time because it would have taken too much time away from actually doing the writing. So we're just kind of throwing questions at me now, and I will blab. This is the format. So, did you have any?
Yeah, I'm really curious. How finished books do you currently have?
Ooh, let me look on my Dropbox. I'll get you the count.
You can share some with us.
I can share. I usually during my State of Sanderson, my year-end blog post, I usually talk about most of them. So, let's see. You do not. All right, so... I list 43 books on here that I've written some things on. But most of them are books that have been released, right? On this list that's not released, we have Arithmetis 2 is on the list, and so I have a few chapters of that. Alcatraz 6, Adamant, I've done readings from Adamant before. Apocalypse Guard, Lost Battle, Starburner. I don't like that name, but so those are books that I've gotten a little bit. I've got, these are unfinished books that I've started or something like that, and have never gotten. So Dark One, Death by Pizza, I Hate Dragons, King's Necromancer, Liar, Part Mel. And then these, yeah. So that's basically it. And there's a few short fiction things that I've tried that I haven't finished. But yeah. So I have 45. But most of them I published or were my early books that I will never publish because they're not any good.
Okay. I have a question. How do not any of the characters in your head currently not battle with each other for attention? I mean, I've heard other authors say that writing process is like just listening to the characters in my head and going out, and you are so productive. You put out different books, and you have a middle grade book, you have epic fantasy, you have short fiction. You do all sorts of things. How do you manage not to, I don't know, lose control?
Yeah, I am an outliner, and as you know, I like a good outline. That keeps me structured. One of the other things that I do is when I finish a book, I'm always looking for something brand new that's very different. I often describe it like if you're gonna eat cheeses, you'll eat something else in between to get a different flavor in your mouth. You'll eat a grape or something. Well, when I write a book, I will usually write something very different. It's where Legion and Arithmetis come from, in order to refresh myself before I get back to it. And so I also have a wiki, and that keeps a lot of my information. Just that's useful. I don't know. I don't lose track of stories very often, though I do lose track of the small details. The dangerous thing for me is if I change something in my outline right before going to work on it, sometimes my brain remembers it the old way. And so Peter has to keep constantly correcting me. There are some things that I have trouble remembering that I changed. Yeah. Silver in the Mistborn books is the famous one. I used to use silver as one of the metals for allomancy in the very first draft even of Mistborn. And I'm in the back of my head, silver is still one of the metals, and so I occasionally mention it. And then Peter's like, silver is not an element metal. So. Other questions?
How did you find an agent at the first place? You said wrote 13 novels.
13 novels.
One was so.
And I sold that one without an agent. Yeah, the process was I went to science fiction conventions, and I met the editors, and I started learning who they were and learning what books they edited. And I stopped them. Yeah, I stopped. I did. My friend Dan Wells, who's on the podcast with me, and my friend Peter Ahlstrom, who's now my assistant. And together we went and we hunted editors. We stalked them. We learned about them. And we submitted books to them. Peter wanted to be an editor. Dan and I wanted to be published. And so eventually we found an editor who picked up and started publishing us, both Dan and me, both the same editor. So once I got an offer, I called an agent that I'd met at one of these conventions. And I had sent him a book, and he rejected it. But he had offered good feedback on it, so I liked his perspective. I knew he gave good feedback. So I called him and asked him if he would handle negotiations, and that's how I got my agent. It's backward from most authors. Most authors get an agent and then sell a book. I was too impatient for that, so I sold a book and then got an agent.
But you haven't self-published?
I have self-published. In the U.S., most of my small press, my small novellas, a lot of those are self-published, or they're hybrid published. Emperor's Soul, I self-published, but I also had a print publisher do a print edition. I did the ebook edition. In America, ebooks are a very big deal. Not in most of Europe, they don't sell. But in America, I'm two-thirds ebook.
Whoa,
66% really? Of my sales are all electronic. And so Legion and Emperor's Soul, Perfect States, these were all self-published original novellas. Mistborn Secret History, I don't know if that one's in Bulgarian yet or not, but
not yet.
Secret History. It's if you like the original Mistborn trilogy, it's a parallel story to it. I don't know when it will be published in Bulgarian.
We will ask you how.
Yeah. He could always add it to the next Wax and Wayne novel if he wanted to. That would be a good place for it. Or he could publish it on some. It's big for a novella. It's longer than Emperor's Soul. But it's, do you know what a parallel novel is? So a parallel novel, it takes place during the same time period, but with a different perspective behind the scenes. So Secret History is a parallel novel told from a character's viewpoint, showing the events of the original trilogy with more Cosmere awareness and some of the secrets and things like that. So
sounds wonderful.
Yeah, so it's so people who like the Cosmere, Secret History has a lot of interesting stuff to it.
Congratulations on the interview.
Oh, thank you.
And I wanted to ask, are you going to be involved in the screenplay?
We have received the screenplay. I'm not going to write, though.
Yeah.
I don't write them. But we have received the screenplay for The Way of Kings. It's big. It's 2 to 3 times as long as a film screenplay needs to be. But they have sent it in, and we are now reading it, my wife, my agent, and I. So they are involving us. We're really excited that they were willing to send us the screenplay.
My question was purely from the fact that it's a great fantasy series, and Hollywood has a way of,
destroying it?
Well, yeah. I'm trying to be diplomatic here.
That's the challenge. That's the challenge and the risk you take when you say yes to Hollywood. You can't get an adaptation that's as good as the Game of Thrones one unless you risk getting an adaptation that's as bad as something like Aragorn.
Yeah.
And so that's your gamble. Most of the people you work with in Hollywood really want to make a good film, but it is such a big process, and so many people get involved that sometimes they spiral out of control, but nobody wants to do that. So most of the people I've met and worked with I really like in Hollywood. But so far we have not managed to get anything made, and hopefully we'll be able to get this made.
Mm-hmm. And talking about movies,
mm-hmm.
When you write a certain character, do you imagine a famous actor or something?
Usually I don't. Most of the time the character is the person I have in my head. The exception is Legion. Legion, all the hallucinations are either people I know or famous actors. Yep.
Legion?
Legion himself is nobody. He is the character from my brain, the people he sees. So he sees like Morgan Freeman as Tobias. And JC is Baldwin from, what's his name? Steve Baldwin from Firefly. Yeah.
Do they know?
No, they don't know. But yeah, I see that actor, JC. I call him JC because That was his initials in in Firefly, Jane. And so, right. And him and so I cast a lot of those people for some weird reason. Like, Audre is my French editor, my editor in France. That's one of his hallucinations. So they're not all famous people. The Audre is famous to me. But yeah, Ivy is Gwen Paltrow. That's the only one where I've cast people. Everyone else, they're just the people they are in my brain.
And how do you feel about fan casting?
I think it's great. I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I love seeing what the fans come up with. And so, yeah, it is one of my delights to see how people interpret my work, either through art or through fan casting or music or whatever. It always makes me feel cool. I love it.
That's really cool of you.
What are the books you read?
I have just read. So my favorite author is Terry Pratchett.
Okay.
And
he looks even more
good.
I recently read Mary's new book, Mary Robinette Cole, from the podcast. Her new book is called Ghost Talkers. I listen to the audio and she reads her own audio. Ghost Talkers was super good. I read The Expanse somewhat recently. Did you guys know The Expanse? Yeah. Leviathan Wakes by Daniel Abraham, that's under a pseudonym. He's one of the authors. And The Expanse is very good. I read a couple of books that I don't tell people I read because I didn't like them. I generally only mention books that I enjoyed because people don't need Brandon Sanderson, dissing their book or whatever. What's that?
Why not?
Because I'm not a reviewer, that's not my job. And
just reading.
But that, I'm still a reader, but I have
a very important point.
I have a disproportionate amount of power in that field. Well, think of it this way. What if when I had started writing, what if George R. R. Martin had said, I don't like this guy's books, when I'm a nobody? It could have destroyed my career. George and I have different philosophies on writing. George has read one of my books, and he didn't really like it because they are not his style of book. He doesn't like high magic. He doesn't like a lot of magic in his books. He didn't hate it, but he didn't really like it. What if he had gone out and said, this book is terrible, don't read this book?
What if he said exactly that? Maybe he would have said, I don't like this one, but this and this.
Right. The reason he doesn't say that, and you'll see that George doesn't do this and I don't do this, is new authors have enough problems.
Mm-hmm.
They do not need... now I'll talk about other writers, like for instance, like if you're famous in something, then it's okay. I didn't ever get into Sword of Truth by Terry Eugene. I read the first one and thought it was pretty decent. I put the second one down halfway through. It never captured me. I'll talk about things like that, but I'm not a book reviewer, and I don't think that new writers need someone like me. And plus, what advantage does it give? There are too many books to read anyway. So if I just highlight ones that I like and you go read those, it has the same effect, right? You find something you'll enjoy, maybe, or if you like my taste in books. It's just a personal thing. I don't think that someone who does as well as me has a place putting down other people's books. That's what booktubers are for. That's what bloggers are for. No, really. You provide if you give a bad review to something, that's a good resource for people. Bad reviews are useful and helpful, but I don't think it's my job to do that. I'll talk about movies, but I won't talk about books that way.
What about the positive opinions?
I'll do positive. I will do positive opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll write reviews of things that I like, and I'll say, you guys should read this because it's good. But I don't do this thing was bad, particularly from a newer author. If I didn't like it, I just won't mention it.
You're really kind, kind person. Really nice of you.
How did your relationship with readers change after Facebook and letting people read?
Yeah, yeah.
It became that important.
It's been really interesting because I started when the internet was brand new. And when I started, MySpace was still a thing. right? Yeah, uh-huh. The weirdest moment was when I started publishing. I used to hang out a lot on a lot of websites and would chat with people and things like this. And then suddenly, when I got published, when I got famous, it was 2007. When I really started to pick up fame. That's when Mistborn hit the New York Times list, and right after that, the Wheel of Time announcement happened. Suddenly, all of the websites that I normally went to had people talking about me, and that was a very weird mix of my professional life and what had been my personal life up to that point. Like Reddit, suddenly everyone's talking about Brandon on Reddit and things like this. And my Facebook page filled up with people who were fans. So once upon a time, I just had a couple of hundred Facebook friends that were my friends and things like that. And then suddenly, boom, because Facebook didn't do fan pages back then. And you didn't know how to use Facebook. And so my friend list filled up like that.
5K.
Yeah, 5K. And suddenly I couldn't see what my friends were doing anymore. But I didn't want to unfriend all these people who were enthusiastic about my books. And so it's really changed the way I use social media. I don't go on Facebook to find out what my friends are doing. I can't. I can't find them in my stream. So Facebook and Twitter and everything transitioned to only being ways I interact with my fans. I still can Reddit, but if I ever post anything, I have to be ready for it to turn into a big Q&A session, regardless of what I post. So yeah, it has changed the way I use social media. But at the same time, you can see my generation of author are very much more comfortable with this.
Mm-hmm.
When you go back one generation to the generation before me, they don't do the same interaction just because they didn't grow up with it. Robin Hobb doesn't do the same. George Martin, I mean, he has his blog, but it's on LiveJournal, I think. He kind of blogs. I mean, it's nice George still interacts, but he doesn't do as much. It's not like me and Pat and Joe Abercrombie and people who are social media has been a part of our lives since we were in college. So, and I bet the next generation, it'll be even different. I just had to get on Instagram because I hadn't been on Instagram. That's what the kids are on, apparently.
It's wonderful. Yeah. So many
I don't do Snapchat. That Snapchat's too ephemeral for me. But the thing I want to get is I want to get one of those 360-degree cameras. I go so many interesting places. I think those would make for cool pictures. The restaurant last night I went to was so cool. I wanted to get a picture of it and post it up so people could see. Now I got to say, Bulgarians, you like meat?
Yeah.
I like meat too. There
we go. Let's say, you should do that.
Uh-huh.
And that would be a good favor for our tourists.
We're not doing it, right?
I went it's not a cathedral, because it's not Catholic. The Orthodox, you still call them cathedrals?
Mm-hmm.
Church. You just call it church.
Temple.
Yeah. A temple. But yeah, I went to the Orthodox temple today with the catacombs underneath. It was really cool.
You can write a novel.
Yeah.
The bones are starting to move.
There you go. Shadows for Silence and the Force of Hell is a horror story, but it hasn't been published yet in Bulgarian, I don't think. But it is a horror story. It's in the Cosmere. So it's the closest I've gotten. I haven't done true horror.
Okay.
Well, I'm 3 through 10.
What about your favorite book blog?
Book blog?
Yeah.
A Dribble of Ink I used to read a lot, but that, a lot of the blogs that I used to read don't have as much time as they used to. Like, I used to read Fantasy Book Spot, A Dribble of Ink, we noticed that a lot of the bloggers tend to have like a 10-year lifespan, it seems like, the blogs do, before you just get worn out on blogging and things like that. So these days I read File 770, what's it called?
Okay.
let me look it up so you can quote it right. Because it's a bunch of numbers.
Do you manage your social media profiles yourself, or you just
do? I do File 770. That's right. I also follow Ansible, but everybody follows Ansible. It's not really a blog; it's more a fanzine. Do you guys know Ansible? Yeah, Robert Langford. But it's like from he's been doing it forever, from like the 70s, and now it's an email thing, but it's basically a blog. What was the question? I just lost it. No, after that one.
Do you make your social media profile?
Oh, yeah. So if I have a signing or a post that goes live, I have my assistant just post, there is a signing here, post went live, that sort of stuff. But if it actually sounds like me, then it's me. right? If it says I, or if it's... So the stuff that he posts will be things like, a new blog post just went live. That's not always me. but I just signed books here. That's me. Or whatnot. So.
So I met the greatest Bulgarian book blogger. Who sound like you?
No.
all right. So who hasn't asked a question? Who wants to ask one? Anyone? You don't have to. All right. Other questions? Yeah.
Another one. A comic book you wrote is going to be published today.
Today.
In Bulgaria.
Where are the books? Where is the new book?
And since I am a big, big comic book fan,
excellent.
I wanted to ask you if you were a comic book fan when you were a kid. You said that you started reading a bit late, mm-hmm. but what about comic books? Did you like?
I did, but it was about the same time that I discovered them. And the thing that I got hooked on was Eastman and Laird's original TMNT. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Wonderful.
The classic.
Yeah.
And from there, I moved on to, I really like it when, I don't consider myself a super comic book nerd. I have friends who are, and I have them give me cycles. and then I read those, or like graphic novels. Like I loved All-Star Superman, and I really like, Kingdom Come. I really like... when I can get a good cycle that has a beginning, middle, and end, my biggest complaint about comic books is that they're so inconsistent. Like sometimes you get a really good cycle with a great beginning, middle, and end, and sometimes you get a bunch of crossovers and you can't follow them and you don't know what's going on. And I do read a lot of web comics for that reason, because they tend to be single creator web comics, like Dr. McNinja. It's probably my favorite comic ever. You guys haven't read Dr. McNinja, and it finished just a couple of months ago. So I read a lot of web comics, and I read, I've read Watchmen, I've read Dark Knight Returns, all of this stuff that's the classics, and then whatever my friends give me. Yeah.
So speaking of young authors, and I'm really curious, what do you think is the best way for a young author to focus? Should he write more novels, short stories? Which is the best way to
get published? So the answer, the best way to get published is different from what is the best thing to do. Usually the best thing to do is whatever makes you productive and excited to get up each day writing. If writing short stories is what makes you excited to keep writing, then that's what you should do. If
no.
Yeah? No.
Stories are very bad shit.
Yeah, yeah, but what I'm saying is if you love, right, if you're excited by it, then you will learn to write and you will keep writing and you will practice. If you try writing and you things you don't love, if you're like, I have to write this, and then you don't enjoy it, you will just stop writing and you won't become a writer. So the number one thing is to make sure that you're writing a format that makes you excited each day. Now, professionally, the best thing to write are novels. If you can learn to write particularly short to mid-length novels. The big epics are hard to sell. Once they do well, they can sell very well to the public, but the publishers are very hesitant about them because the costs are super big. So the best thing to be writing are standalones that can have a sequel if you wanted to do one that are shorter, like 120,000 words. That's the best professionally that you can probably do. Once upon a time, you had to write short stories to get published. That's not the case anymore. In fact, I think fewer people write short stories to get published than write novels these days. But yeah, you should focus as a new writer on what's exciting to you and what makes you finish things. That's another big one. If you don't ever finish anything, if you just start a whole bunch of things, then you will never really learn how to write. You won't learn how to do endings, which are really hard. And so you need to do what is making you finish your stories. It's a little easier in the States because, number one, there's a huge market, right? So there's more potential for income. And then number two, the ebook market has made it way easier to self-publish, which allows you to, allows a little more variety to succeed in the market, and more variety in the market tends to be more advantageous to newer writers.
Is there a formula for the greatest character?
Formula for the greatest character? I don't think so. I can tell you some successful formulas, right? But greatest is really hard to determine in art. It depends so much on opinion and things like this. But I would say that the characters that really work are characters who have an internal conflict, but also have some sort of skill, something they're really good at, right? And some sort of deep flaw. And so you mix a skill, a flaw, an internal conflict. Characters tend to be great if they have some self-motivation, right? Making a character want something is really, really helpful for making a great character. Kurt Vonnegut said this, make every character want something, even if it's just a cup of water. And so, so we call that, motivation and proactivity are a good mix. These are all good mixes. I usually say a character's a mix between likability, skill level, and motivation, but there are many more components to it than that.
I'm just curious, the publishing of your stories somehow affected your writing process for the future?
Yeah, knowing that I was actually going to be able to publish and things like this, what it did is it made me way more confident. And I think that confidence shows in my later books. See, I sold Elantris first, and my 14th book was Mistborn. And I think Mistborn shows a confidence and a professionalism that Elantris doesn't. And that, when I wrote Elantris, I mean, I think Elantris is still a good book, but I did not know I would be able to be a professional writer. When I wrote Mistborn, I knew, because I had a book deal.
Mentioning so many authors in our conversation, how do you feel about collaborations between authors?
Collaborations?
Yeah.
I think they can lead to some really cool things, like Good Omens is a great example. It's an excellent book that matches the strengths of Neil Gaiman with the strengths of Terry Pratchett. Some of the early books that I read that I loved were the Dragonlance books, right, which were collaborations, Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman. And so I think they can work. I have not been able to make them work for me, except unless you count the Wheel of Time as a collaboration. But that was more of a collaboration in that I got handed a big pile of notes, and I did whatever I wanted with them. And so I haven't been able to really get a collaboration going. I do want to do one someday. I always talk to Pat Rothfuss about this. I want to do a collaboration where together we brainstorm a group of characters and then we make them enemies and we alternate chapters and we try to screw up everyone, the other characters. Like we try to assassinate the other characters and things like this, and we write back and forth and then we give it to somebody else, like George Martin, to judge. And say he has to tell us what the ending is after we do the back and forth. And then it's not a collaboration of, you know, someone and someone. It's versus.
Oh, right? That's
so
versus.
I am so going office. To read that.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Yeah, some versus book would be great.
And
by the way, now we can tell Patrosis that you're the first to come to Bulgaria.
Yeah, you
that
tell Pat.
That
I beat you to Bulgaria.
So. Yeah. Still tell him, we love him.
Okay, I'll tell him.
How many hours a day do you work on your writing?
Usually about 10 hours.
10 hours?
Which is a normal, at least for America, normal day's work plus... I don't commute, so I have an extra hour on every other side because I just work from home. I usually spend about 10 hours on my writing, about 4 hours with my family, and about 2 hours goofing off.
How do you goof off?
Video games, usually. But once in a while, other things. Like I listen to podcasts, or I usually count reading as work. So I don't have to usually count that in there, but it depends. Sometimes I'll put a book in that space.
I have a question. Comes over PC Master Race.
So I am neutral. My favorite two games of last year were probably the Civilization series and the Dark Souls games, and one is console and one is PC. So I bought, I had an Atari and a 2600 and a Nintendo and a Super Nintendo and a PlayStation and an Xbox. I mean, I've had most of the consoles all through my life. I've got a PS4 now.
Where do you keep those?
But that, well, I don't keep the old one. I've been a console kid forever, but I mean, I also played TIE Fighter on my computer. That was a good game, X-Wing. I played all the Civilizations and those are, so, yeah. I refuse to pick a side.
Yeah, I just want to
say. Yeah.
Well, if you consider reading as a work, what do you read for fun?
Yeah.
Do you ever read for fun?
Yeah, I do. I mentioned Terry Pratchett. I discovered Terry Pratchett like in 2003, so it was after he'd been writing for a while. So I still have some that I haven't read. I haven't finished, for instance, the Rincewind books. So I still have the occasional Pratchett I can pick up. I've been saving the last few because I've read, you know, all the Guards books and all the Death books and all the Moisfun Lidwick books and all of the standalones. And so I really have a few Witches books and a few Rincewind books. And then I'm done with Terry Pratchett because there's no more Terry Pratchett books, which is a tragedy. So that's those are some of my favorites. I really like picking up a new book by a new author that I have never read before, just trying them out. That's a lot of fun for me.
What makes you pick it up? What makes you pick up a book that you...
Yeah, most of the time, it's because either it's somebody I met in publishing, or it's some new author who could use a boost to their career, or it's one of my students. If one of my students gets published, I like to try to read their book. And so, yeah.
And Ready Player One?
I read Ready Player One, yes. Mm-hmm. It was fun. I'm looking forward to the movie.
Such a lovely
movie. Yeah, it was so different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think we have the movie this summer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do
I read classics? Yes, not as much as I used to. I read a lot back when I was in college. Les Miserables was my favorite, but I really liked Paradise Lost, I really liked Melville, so I read a bunch these days, not as much as I used to. It's been a while since I just picked up a classic and read it.
There is not so much magic there, right?
Yeah, not as much magic, yeah, and I do like my magic.
And which are your favorite? Fantasy classics.
Classics? Favorite fantasy classics? I would count Anne McCaffrey very highly, though she says she wasn't fantasy. So take that for what you will. Bob Silverberg. Of course, Ursula Le Guin. Earthsea. Most of hers is science fiction, but Earthsea. One other of my favorites. Guy Gabriel Kay. If you haven't read Guy Gabriel Kay, you're missing out. He's really good. Taigana is usually the one that people recommend, and I do too. But The Lions of Alrasan is also very good. But everything by Guy Gabriel Kay, except for his first trilogy. His trilogy was a little rougher. That's The Fiona of Our Tapestry. And his new stuff is great too, Under Heaven and stuff. So. What other classics would I say are really great fantasy classics? Melanie Ron isn't read enough anymore, and she is great. Robert Jordan, obviously.
obviously.
Tad Williams, really like Tad Williams books. I've read basically everything.
Do you like, I'm only asking because you mentioned her name, Robin Hobb?
Yeah, I love Robin Hobb, but I like, Robin Hobb is still contemporary, so I don't think of her, but yeah, I mean, Assassin's Apprentice is, it's 20 years old now, so I guess it would count. But yeah, Robin Hobb is fantastic. I always read the new Robin Hobb book when it comes out, no matter what it is.
I actually, when it comes to her Lightship trilogy, I think when I read it, it was the only fantasy that had a kind of family drama in it.
Yeah.
And when I started The Way of Kings, I also saw some of that.
Yeah, you can definitely count Robin as an influence on me in that way.
Yeah.
I think that I like having families in books because they're such a part of our lives. And I mean, I'm okay with orphans. I wrote about an orphan. It makes good storytelling. But at the same time, family drama is something that I think fantasy maybe ignores a little too often.
Do you read writers?
Not as many as I used to. I run across one now and then that I really do like. I've moved to mostly reading blogs and things like that rather than books on the writing craft. I think a lot of the newer writers, you know, like John Scalzi and people like this on their blogs, Pat Rothfuss's blog and Neil Gaiman's blog, they'll talk about writing, and that's the sort of thing that I follow now. Mary has a really good blog, Mary Robin Cole. NK Jemisin, she has a really good blog. But I don't, you know, those aren't fantasy review blogs, they're just writer blogs that I follow all of this. Yeah. Oh, you know who has a really good writer blog? The guy who wrote Blackbird. Chuck Wendig has a really good writer blog.
What questions are you most tired of hearing?
The number one thing that I get asked that I can never answer, I'm kind of tired of, a lot of interviewers ask, what question do you wish interviewers would ask you? The problem is that, like, you hear that so often, you would think I would have an answer ready, but I can never think of an answer to that one. I don't get tired of questions because, I mean, they're new for the person who's asking them, even if I've heard them a lot. And so,
answer differently?
It depends on my mood. Sometimes I answer a little differently. A lot of times I have an answer I've given a lot, so I'm used to it.
Can we try and get your favorite question then?
I don't know what my favorite question is. Yeah, that's the sort of thing I have. That's the one I have a lot of trouble answering.
Yeah. When we send you some questions from Shadow Dance, we really tried to ask questions that have never been tried before.
Right, yeah.
We didn't know if we succeeded.
You did a very good job.
Okay, I have one. Uh-huh. And as I said in the beginning, maybe I'm the only one who never read anything of yours.
Okay.
And okay, so I heard of you we've been together for 8 years, and
okay.
I've heard only Brandon.
I'm sorry.
No. Can you tell me one of your books, or I don't know, maybe more than one? I want to start read something of yours.
I would read The Emperor's Soul. The Emperor's Soul, it's not intimidating because it's kind of smaller.
I like
it. But it really shows off what I do as a writer. It's a really good example. It won the Hugo Award, so it's my most award-winning. It's a great place to start. So it is where I usually point people.
Oh, okay.
And in Bulgarian, they handmade those covers.
The publishers who translate your outline series, they have the most amazing copies. The designers are so
cool. They're right in there.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
We'll talk about that later.
he works with another publisher.
Uh-oh, you're the rivals. Where do you work?
Thank you, because sometimes I just don't know where to start, and
it's a little intimidating sometimes. And it's good to ask, because like Terry Pratchett, you don't want to start at the first book on him, because his first book is actually his weakest book, Color of Magic.
The first time we see this world is in stuff. It's a science. It's science fiction. I'm a practice geek. The Color of Magic really is not.
It's not the best place to start.
I myself started with the witches.
Yeah, that's a good place to start. Guards is a good place to start.
Eric is
a good place to start. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
I like the Witches series.
You like the Witches?
Yeah, I love the Witches.
You can also start with Tiffany Aching in the Witches cycle, which is another good place to start. But
I think that it's supposed to be middle grade.
I like how he writes them. They're different from his other Discworld. In that, I'm happy to see a different style of Terry Pratchett. But yes, I have a few Rincewind and like two witches novels left, not counting Kithniacan. I've read all of those, but so yeah, I don't have much project.
I have another one, and by seeing all these people, I know exactly how they react when we are in public and stuff. Most of them, I guess, are super excited to meet you. How do you act when you meet someone famous for you and someone you are like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god?
Daniel and Barbara Hambly, Carrie Cratchit, each of them, I just kind of flipped out.
So maybe you should turn your back on that squirrel.
Yeah, So
I know how that feels. And it's fun to bring my wife to conventions because she's read fantasy since she was young, but she never went to conventions.
No.
And so we'll go to a convention and she'll see an author that she's never met. She'll go over and fangirl. my wife is fangirling over everyone else. Me, I'm just, the guy she always thinks that way.
Your generation of is somehow close to course. It's really, really easier to talk to your wife.
Yeah.
I guess from the generation in the past the writer was kind of a son.
Right.
And
maybe
now,
because thanks to social
he's
media.
Here.
Because I even have like the lectures and things. You can see us online. We blog about our personal lives and things like that. So it's a very different world. So I like it. A long time ago, if you wanted to be an artist, you had to have a wealthy patron, right? Somebody just gave you money so that you could create art. And these days, our wealthy patrons are crowdsourced, right? It's the general public. And they make it possible for people like me to not have a real job and to tell stories instead, which I really appreciate. And I love that the internet has allowed us to be close and things like this, to interact with the fans. I'm sorry if one of you was the one who messaged me on Reddit and said, are you really coming to Bulgaria? And I'm like, I really honestly don't know. I remember they were telling me they posted on their Facebook page, but I haven't posted on my website yet.
Yeah, it was a big surprise.
So all the fans were like, is he really? And they were texting me, are you really? But my wife is the one that handles the details. And so I had just said, yeah, send me to Bulgaria, but I didn't know for sure or things like this. So I had to be like, I don't know for sure. We'll post it on my website.
Well, I'm the crazy one in our family because I deal with the social media.
Okay.
And when Artline Studios published that you're going to come in Bulgaria, I was like, okay, I have to find the phone of the chef of the studio. And I was like, hi, I'm introducing myself. And she's like, we don't know anything. He just said, okay. And for the last 3 months, that guy, I don't know how he didn't block my phone because I was like, hi, what happened with Sanders Anderson? And I'm like, yeah. So I understand your wife and I understand connection with your family because women, we are crazy.
Yeah, when I read the Facebook post, Brandon Sanderson is coming in March, I thought about, he's not really coming.
Yeah.
They mean it's a new book.
Uh-huh.
He's coming
right.
Through a book.
We're not used
to
that kind of meeting.
Yeah.
Well, it's partially because of Barcelona, right? The invitation I received from Bulgaria then, and then I watch where I get a lot of social media and comments from people and things like this, and so I try to pay attention to that and to go where people want me to visit.
Yeah, those my colleagues and friends which you met in Barcelona, I actually made them a little bit crazy before that because I have read The Way of Kings and Words of Radiance way before them.
Uh-huh.
So for a few months, all I was talking about with all my friends was Shavan, 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 and then okay.
That's enough. That's awesome.
They finally read it, and they're pretty happy they did.
Do you know who Penny Arcade is? Penny Arcade. Now they're web cartoonists. They did a comic on me.
Whoa.
Because they're some people in their office talk about my books too much.
I can relate.
So they wrote, let's see if I can find it, a helpful guide on how to convince people that you've read Brandon Sanderson books when you haven't, so that they'll shut up and stop talking about him. It was pretty funny.
Where did you write a book?
Wow, that's mean.
It's ruining
me. Yeah. What would I pick? This is like Sophie's Choice, right?
Yeah.
Like, which of your children would you pick? What's that? I don't know. I would quickly go publish them all as the Cosmere in one volume. I'll pick that one. Probably Way of Kings, would be my choice. But I don't know, that's very Sophie's Choice. Choose between your children. Yeah. Do I read? Yeah, I read a lot of history books. I like history a lot. For non-fantasy, I read the occasional mystery or thriller. But I really do like fantasy and science fiction. I'll read... Yeah, so most of what I read is fantasy or science fiction. Yes, though not as directly one-to-one like him. Like, he's doing War of the Roses in fantasy world, right?
Yeah.
I tend to do a bigger blend, a lot of different things together, and try to kind of be inspired by history, but take a few more steps away, like the Safe Hand kind of in Stormlight Archive being based on the idea of taboos in our world and things like that. There's no culture I've based that on, but a lot of cultures have interesting taboos, which then I translate into books. So, but yeah.
It's very interesting for me while reading the books in Stormlight, the hand part.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was very, then I was like, their world.
Yeah,
they don't want
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very, very nice touch. For, I mean, these are the things that make a world believable for me. Like, some is these types of things that make a world believable for me. It's just very interesting. Like,
yep.
Instead of covering the face,
yeah.
You cover the head.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it looks just like.
Yeah, it was really great.
It made sense.
Especially
yeah.
That scene, there was a scene in a bar or tavern,
mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
The women
mm-hmm.
were with bare hands,
yeah.
And all the men were,
whoa!
Scandalous.
Very scandalous.
Yeah.
Yep. And some parts of the world, showing the bottom of your foot is a huge insult, and I couldn't sit like this. Like, we have interesting taboos as human beings, and I love that idea. And so I play with it.
Is there a book or an author that really made you love reading when you were a little kid?
Yeah, it was Dragonstain by Barbara Handley. You probably, I think you came a little late. I talked about it a little bit. It's fine. I was 14 and a teacher handed me Dragonstain and said, I think you will like this. You should read it. And that made me fall in love. And then I went to the library and I checked out the next book in line alphabetically. So I'm like, there's got to be more books like this. And it was Dragonflight by Anne McCaffrey. And that is where it all began. I think Dragonflight might have been right before it, technically. But yeah, right around there, I read all the dragon books that were in a little row. So.
Would you mind if each of us take a selfie?
Yeah, let's do a picture each, and then we'll sign your books. All right.
Okay,
and that should save you some time.
I remember these pictures with him.
Oh, yeah, that would be great. So do you want to be sitting down at the table, or do you want to be standing up?
Maybe around you, all over.
Oh, all of it? Okay.
And then
show you. Yeah. Why don't we have, see if, That's fine.
Where we will gather, maybe here.
Maybe you take a picture. So let's give one camera and she'll take a couple.